Hello and good evening to a very windy Glanmire in Cork in Ireland. It's Paul O'Mahony here, and I spent so long today reading the Financial Times, the weekend edition of the Financial Times, that I think it would be terribly selfish of me not to do something with all the reading that I've done. So I'm going to share with you a few highlights from this weekend in the Financial Times, and some of them are really going to shock you. Now, the first thing is that, and this isn't shocking, is that the UK looks like it's going to go in for the QE2. Now, that is a quantitative easing 2. In other words, the government or the Bank of England is going to pump a load more money into the economy because they're afraid over in the UK, or the UK government is afraid, that basically the economy is going to stall. So they're going to print some extra money, put it into the economy in order to help demand, to stir things up. This is indeed in direct contrast with what David Cameron said in 2009 at his Tory party conference speech, where he said basically in the end printing money leads to inflation. So I found that out today on the front page. But the thing that's really going to shock you is the news that there is more in the Financial Times this weekend about Liverpool Football Club than there is about Ireland. Now, the thing about Liverpool Football Club is that it is in enormous trouble. It is not making any money, and neither is it making any points in the football competition. So, a guy called John W. Henry, who actually saved the Red Sox in the United States, the Boston Red Sox baseball team. He saved them, turned them around, applied forensic hedge fund skills, actually analytic skills is what I mean, to save that baseball team from oblivion and bring it back from the brink. And he's now in the running to buy Liverpool Football Club. Now, most Liverpool football fans are tired, fed up, worn down, and loyal. And they really keep on singing, you know, you will never walk alone. And some of them might be even singing Ferry Across the Mersey. But the Financial Times is full of Liverpool this weekend. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a minute. As I turn over, I find out that the new Labour leader has shafted Ed Balls. He has appointed Alan Johnson to the position of Shadow Chancellor, which is the position that Gordon Brown used to adopt. And the Financial Times report seems to suggest that the reason that Ed Miliband is very comfortable appointing Alan Johnson is that Alan Johnson has no wish to be Prime Minister. So there we are. That's kind of interesting, a bit of a drama over there. You'll get much better reports of what's going on in the UK from other people on Audioboo. Now, let's move on to the next thing. Is there's a fascinating article here about what members of the Conservative Cabinet are actually doing in their spare time. Because David Cameron, the Prime Minister, has called on people to get out there and do stuff and don't just sit back and wait for other people to make them better for you. Let's make life better. That seems to be one of his current themes. So the Financial Times did a ring around, and they found out that the Oliver Letwin in the Cabinet Office, he actually works 4 hours a month behind the counter in Thorncombe Village Shop in Dorset, in his Dorset constituency. So the man is there selling things in his local shop. A little bit further on, Caroline Spellman, the Environment Secretary, big post this, she set up and ran 2 charities in Solihull. And what were the charities set up to do? Set up to help drug users kick their habit. And another one is there to help victims of domestic violence. I'll quickly tell you that Frances Maud, also in the Cabinet Office, is a governor of a school and a trustee of Eastside Young Leaders Academy in London, which aims to produce Britain's first black prime minister. That would be a turn up for the books. William Hague has actually got together with 150 people in his constituency to reopen a pub. Bought shares in a co-op, took over the George and Dragon in Dunswell in North Yorkshire, and he's also raised money for charities. So Srebrenica, yeah, he's involved in a social action project in Srebrenica. Anyway, look, I won't go on with this, but the thing that it made me think about is that I wonder what Irish cabinet ministers are doing in their so-called spare time. What are they putting back into society, since they're taking a heck of a lot out in the way of expenses? So there we are. Now, why do you read the Financial Times? You read the Financial Times to find out about golf, don't you? Donald Trump, apprentice guy from the United States, he built some huge hotel too as well. Big property developer. He's building a golf resort in northeast Scotland. It's actually, he hopes, going to be the world's greatest golf course, and it's built on coastal sand dunes north of Aberdeen. That's a very cold place in the winter up there, I can tell you. But a super place to play golf, I can tell you. There are some wonderful courses up there in north east of Scotland. But, you know, to give him encouragement to keep on building the course, he's been given an honorary degree from Robert Gordon University. You know, there was some local controversy about it. But basically, he's building this massive golf course, and which has been opposed by environmentalists. And unfortunately, I don't know enough about the issues to know whose side I'd be on in that argument. I'm pretty keen on great golf courses. However, on the other hand, some people have built golf courses and cut off access for locals walking around the coastline. And there's a lot of issues to do with that. But that's the kind of thing you can find out in the Financial Times, you know. Now, the thing that really has me very worried this weekend is actually the fear of a global food crisis. We seem to be having the price of corn, rice and wheat rising dramatically. Now, in case you don't want any corn, rice and wheat for your kitchen, I can tell you that corn, rice and wheat is used to feed the world. And if there is a short supply, then we are all going to have to pay more. And one more thing here is very, very important. China. Now, we all know China is a highly important place. But last year, the Nobel Peace Prize Awarding Committee, based in Stockholm, who do they give the Peace Prize to? It was a pretty big shock, actually. President Barack Obama. The man was rather embarrassed, as says the FT, remembers well, to receive it, and he said he certainly wasn't deserving of it. But the person who's got it this year is Liu, L-I-U, and I'm not going to try and pronounce it, X-I-A-O-B-O, Xabo, forgive me for that pronunciation, a 54-year-old Chinese man who is in prison. He was once very, very radical. He was a young university professor, radical literary critic. He left New York, flew back to Beijing in 1989 and joined the students' protest in Tiananmen Square. He's a very, very important person who, I will confess, I do not know. That is a euphemism for saying I actually wouldn't have been able to tell you he existed, to be honest. I don't follow the Chinese dissidents. But this man has won the Nobel Peace Prize. And not only does the FT put an article in there about him, but they also carry a feature in their editorial called China's Nobel. And I'll read you the very first sentence. With its decision to award the Nobel Peace Prize to the jailed Chinese dissident, the Norwegian Nobel Committee has reinserted itself into the best traditions of the award. Now, there's a pretty high praise from the FT for the decision. So that's the kind of thing you can find out in the FT. What else can I tell you? Poor old Norway got into huge trouble, of course, over this now, after the award, because Stockholm the FT correspondent in Stockholm has said that the Norwegian ambassador to Beijing was summoned and was told the Chinese foreign ministry said the award would damage Sino-Norwegian relations. So Norway is struggling with that at the moment. The man apparently